warrior's mindset is about conditioning the mind, body, and spirit. It takes practice, commitment, vision, goal setting, determination, sharp focus, respect, and discipline. Once you learn it, you can apply it to all aspects of your life. The warrior's mindset prepares you for the largest competition ever, the competition against self.
All right, everybody, we here, Willie the Bam Johnson's Warrior's Mindset. You know, it's about mind, body, and spirit. It's about overcoming the obstacles and setting goals, especially during COVID-19. We got to put our best foot forward, and we got to believe, and we got to push forward, and we got to succeed. Man, this show has turned into becoming a fellowship. I done had some of the greatest people on this thing just been pumping me up and motivating me. I mean, we talking people. I mean, Isaac Florentine, Keith Strineberg, but man, I always tell you I seen Bruce Lee and how Bruce Lee changed my life. And we used to go to the movie theaters and stay in the movie theaters all day watching Chinese Connection. But guess what, man? We watched Hell Up in Harlem. We watched Three the Hard Way. We watched Bucktown. Man, I believe Fred Williamson, and I ain't saying it because he's here. He was the coolest guy on the screen, man. We as kids, I don't know if Fred realized it, kids would be in the movie fighting. No, I ain't Jim Brown. I'm Fred Williamson, man. I got the cigar. You know, I ain't Jim Kelly. No, I'm Fred Williamson. And Mr. Fred, to just know you and to be around you and even have you in this interview is such an honor. I mean, to the world, can you give them an intro on how you became the good, bad guy? That's what you told me one time. Give them an intro, sir.
I've always had a plan, you know. To be what my mind wanted to be and not just be a wannabe. I've never been a wannabe. I've never done that before. I am a person who says, I will, not I want to be. So I knew I was going to make a difference. That was my purpose, to make a difference. Because when I came into Hollywood, I had three rules. You can't kill me in a movie. I have to win all my fights in a movie. And I get the girl at the end of the movie if I want her. You got to do two out of three. Now, I knew they weren't going to give me the girl because Black wasn't so totally in then, you know, right? So that was my purpose, to be a strong actor who happened to be Black. I wasn't pushing Blackness. I was pushing strength as a Black man. That's a lot different than trying to be Black, you know? That was not my purpose. My purpose was to create what you're talking about, the kids watching me on the screen and saying, wow, this dude is winning his fights. Ooh, that dude's got a fast draw. Ooh, that dude's got a tough punch. I wanted the young people to get that because I never had it growing up. I never saw that. My images that I saw was Mantan Moreland, the funny guys, you know, Amos and Andy. That didn't do it for me when I was a kid because I'm saying if I was Amos and Andy, there's no way I could walk the street, man. And I had the brother saying, man, why are you acting like that, man? It's like me in a fight. I got to win my fights because some dude, Hollywood got guys 5'8", 5'9". They beat me up on the screen. Brother said, man, why you let that little guy beat you up? I can't explain that to them. Right. I'm the hammer. I'm going to let somebody beat me up on the screen. Come on. Nobody beat me up 10 years of playing football. Why should I come to Hollywood and let it happen?
So the show is about the warrior's mindset. And we know it's a universal perspective. It's just determination, focus. And we might label it as the warrior's mindset. But coming up, they even go into football. As a kid, what made you set a goal and be determined to follow through with that goal that led you to becoming one of the greatest football players of all time?
I never had goals. I never wanted to be a football player, never wanted to be an actor. I had an image in high school that I was a tough guy because I used to get in fights all the time because people saw this face and thought this good-looking face didn't have the physicalness behind it to handle it. So I had to fight all the time. But one day when I was like in the 10th grade, there were two guys ahead of me who were seniors and I watched them and they had reputations of being the baddest, toughest guys in the school. Don't mess with them because they'll beat the dog beans out of you. But I never saw them fight. I never saw them hit anybody. And as they walked down the hallway, kids would get out of their way and want to carry their books. And I said, wow, this is it. It's not what you do. It's how you carry yourself. It's how you get the respect. You don't have to fight to get respect. It's how you carry yourself that get respect. That was a turning point for me to not fight anymore, to go out and a guy approach me and I'm saying, I don't think you want to do that. You don't want to do that, man. You know, you might win the fight, but you're going to lose an eye maybe or some teeth. So you don't want to fight me, you know? So I became a different kind of tough guy. I didn't do it physically. I did it mentally.
But that confidence inside to say you're going to lose an eye or you're going to lose the Adam's apple or, you know, you're going to lose a limb. I mean, what were you doing within your own self or on your own to develop that sort of physical training and confidence that affect you mentally like that? What were you doing?
I'm cocky.
Okay.
I'm conceited. I'm good looking. I live up to all those things. Okay. That's my motivation. You can't say nothing bad about me that's going to affect me or change my lifestyle because I know what it is and I know where I'm headed. You can't change that verbally. You may make some effort to change it physically, but it can't not be changed verbally. I have goals. My goal is to do whatever I want, whenever I want it, and as many times as I want it without affecting other people. It can be done in a positive way and not in a negative way. Economics is the key. You can't be a success in this business or any other business if you don't understand the business of the business. So I made a point of doing that. I graduated from Northwestern University as an architectural engineer. During the offseason when I wasn't playing football, I was an architect for Bechtel Steel in San Francisco. So I had some brains. I had a direction. I had no intention to be a football player for as many years as I did, but it came easy to me. It came easy. So I stayed with it. But then I got bored because it wasn't challenging me mentally. It was only challenging me physically. So after 10 years, I walked away from it and went full time at Bechtel Steel. Unfortunately, that only lasts for 9 months because then I felt I was being restricted. I had to find something else to do. I didn't really know what it is I wanted to do, but I need something that gave me the freedom that football did. So one night I'm watching television. I see Diane Carroll had a show called Julia. I noticed that each guest star role for the Julia show was a new boyfriend. So I said to myself, I'm better looking than those guys. I'm going to Hollywood and become Diane Carroll's boyfriend. I drove to Hollywood. 3 days later, I'm signed to a 3-year contract to be Diane Carroll's boyfriend on the Julia show. That's the beginning of my career.
But you know, for a kid, your determination to stay committed, because so many kids, especially during right now, during COVID, so many people are distracted by the media. I think if we look at one thing that stands out in our society, many, especially our kids, they are influenced by wanting to be like someone else or something, but you were so determined to be you. I mean, if you could offer some advice of how important it is to fight to stay true to you, what would you say to someone?
You cannot be a wannabe. You have to be, I will. I will means if you ever get the opportunity to do whatever you see that person doing, you will make a better choice of them doing it. If you want to be, then you're copying somebody, you know? That's how my, and in the movies, look at the movies, man. Look at the things that I've done. Look how many movies are being made or copies of Fred Williamson movies in the 70s and the early 70s, you know, Denzel Washington, all of them are doing, I did a Western with the black hat with the cowboy outfit, you know, right? You know, I threw those clothes away. I thought the horse was dead that he was riding, you know? So, hey, they're copying me, which is okay. That's respect. I don't mind that, you know, but give me the due. Right? That's how you do it, man. It's all about respect and economics. Don't forget economics. Economics means being in control. 90% of the movies I make now are produced by me, directed by me, and written by me because I understand my audience. I understand what they like to see me do, or I participate in all three of those things just to make sure that the product is right and that it highlights my image that I'm trying to portray. I don't do comedy. Don't mean I ain't funny. I just don't do comedy. You know, we got enough black people being funny. I ain't funny on the screen. Okay? I got one-liners like Clint Eastwood. Yeah. He throws a spear into a guy and he sticks him against the wall and he walks away. Guy walks by and says, where's Joe? He's hanging around back there somewhere. He's hanging against the wall on a spear. Okay. I got one-liners that are funny, but I ain't funny, dude. Not on the screen. That's not my image.
So, I mean, I got, but before we go, I just, when I'm thinking like Three the Hard Way, I mean, I'm thinking Hell Up in Harlem. As a kid, Fred, I mean, and I know, I mean, the emotion that I felt as a kid, and then to meet you, man, just a kid in that movie theater, seeing this guy being so cool. I mean, hey, it's just me, the window washer, baby. You know what I'm saying? I remember the lines, man. Right. I mean, did you ever really think, I mean, just the character, those portrayals of those characters, Hell Up in Harlem, one of the greatest movies of all times. Did you even feel the impact that it was having on those kids that were not just, Isaac just said, it wasn't just the kids in the city. It was kids in Israel. It was kids in China. I mean, how did that make you feel at that time for personal accountability?
But understand, I was a pro football player. My name was not just Fred Williamson. My name was The Hammer.
Right. Okay.
Now, why do you think I created this title, The Hammer? It wasn't because I was picking roses on the football field. I was knocking people out. Yeah. Respect is the name of the game. Yeah. Respect me on the football field, I will knock you out.
Right.
You can translate that into life. Respect is the key. If I'm doing something that is me and not pretending to be somebody else, then I'm going to get the respect that I want. Right. From the kids, I know. They're going to say, they all want to be me because they know I'm not going to lose the fight.
Yeah.
They know I'm not going to get killed. I'm not going to die. That's why they want to be me. You know, because yeah. I'm the guy that wins the fight. It's real simple, man. To me, it's simple. And I turned down a lot of work. They offered me a lot of jobs, but I would turn them down because I know that I have an image and I have to sustain that image. That's to me what employment is about. Once they see you do something, they want you to be that person all the time. You can highlight it and you can put little things on it to make it more interesting and make it more better for them and to understand what you're trying to do. When I did Black Caesar, I was influenced by Edward G. Robinson. In his film, Little Caesar. You know what he did? He was a tough guy, but he helped little old ladies across the street. He bought flowers from some people on the corner to give somebody walking down the street. He was that kind of guy, but he would still blow you away. But he helped a little old lady across the street. He had personality. He had character. He was not just a boring, tough guy.
Right. One of the things, and I think we talked about that, we touched on it when we had a conversation before, but you done seen negativity. You done seen, at one time, even in the streets of Chicago, in the street, in those inner cities, those guys that chose to stand up and be strong for their community, the one thing that kept those communities together, they respected their communities. I mean, what was it? Because sometimes when people look at those inner cities, they think that everybody was a criminal. Everybody, you just sold drugs, you just committed crime. When yet those guys were no different than any other race of people that came and used illegal activities to get ahead and then break the cycle.
Well, the difficulty is when you live in the ghetto, you are Black. It's how you react to being so-called Black. I didn't know I was Black because I didn't act Black. And if I did, it was my character and my personality, not Blackness. It was me. I'm talking to you. You know, I got an education, but I know I got to say, what's up, dude? How you doing, my man? That ain't Northwestern. It's how you doing, sir? Good morning. How are you? Nice to talk to you. That's Northwestern. So I got dual characters. It's how you respond to things around you. I never knew I was Black because I didn't put myself in a Black position.
Right.
I didn't think of myself in a negative way. If I walked in the store and you looked at me, I thought you were staring at me because you thought I was good looking. Right. Because you thought I was such a wonderful guy. You just had to look at me and watch me. I didn't go up to them and say, hey, what you looking at me for? What's on your mind? Ain't my style, man.
Right.
If you don't get physically in my way, I love you. Right. If you get physically in my way, I got to say to you, you don't want to do that. You may win the fight, but some parts of you ain't going to function the same way. So don't mean I'm gonna win every fight, you understand? Right. But you're gonna lose something. I don't have to prove that.
That sounds like James Brown when he said, "I don't know karate, but I know crazy." So that's my dad's line. I don't care what he say. My dad would say, "Throw a kick, boy. Throw, I bet you'll lose a toe when it come back. You know, go ahead, throw it." You know. So, I think that's an important factor, because even when I speak to my dad, when I can use the term poverty, he like, "Poverty? Then you have something on the table? Then you get something for Christmas?" And how important is it? And we got to be careful of the stereotypes that people put around us. You know,
oh, you got to be careful accepting the stereotype.
Okay, I like that. Okay, yeah. I like
not,
that. Okay.
Not what they put around you. You accept it, because I don't think I would have been as accomplished as I have been if I were somebody else, another color. Because being black motivated me, because I had more people all my life telling me what I couldn't do. You can't do this. You can't do that. I was the first black athlete to get a scholarship at Northwestern. Okay. My mom is saying, "What do you want to go over there for? Dad, they're going to just beat you up over there." I said, "But this, you don't understand. I already know this world. I want to go over there and see how they are." "Well, you can't go there." I said, "No, y'all calm down. I'll calm down. Next week, big white limousine." We ain't seen a limousine in my neighborhood ever. Big white limousine from Northwestern comes over to pick me up. I come out of the house, and as I'm walking out of the house, half the neighborhood is out stretching, looking, see what's going on. I'm waving like, "Hey, I'm getting ready to change a new life, people. I will be back. I ain't going for long, but I'm going to make a difference and make a change." So I went to Northwestern. That's why I went to Northwestern.
Yeah. And you know, and I think it's funny, because a lot of the kids, they don't want to rise up to that challenge. I mean, I think some people, and we're teaching martial arts, we done lost what we fighting for. We fighting for any and everything. The media say this, the media say that, you know, but what are we fighting for? It seemed like you didn't let those stereotypes stand in your way. You didn't let them determine who you were going to be. You knew inside yourself that I'm going to be somebody that when you see me or when you think of me, I will inspire you to believe that you can do it. I'm one of those kids. Isaac's one of those people, you know. And we got so many children. My heart, and I think you know it, my heart is committed to every child that I touch, because we don't have people like you and like an Isaac that continue to be consistent in what they say and what they walk. Yeah. And how could you pass upon a message to those role models or those people who choose to be a hero, but they don't take no accountability for what they do and what they say?
Beating you up mentally is much greater victory than beating you up physically. Mm-hmm. Because if I beat you up mentally, it's a lasting effect. Mm-hmm. You will never forget it. It may even help you improve your personality and your character. Yeah. That's more important to me. You want to see how good I look? You know why I look this good? Because I ain't got no stress. You can't stress me. You can't, okay. You can't verbally attack me. I think you're funny.
Yeah.
I'll laugh at you if you verbally attack me. Because what are you going to attack?
Yeah.
This? Come on, man. You can't do that. Physically, you don't want to do that.
Yeah.
You want to do it mentally? Then, hey, we got something to talk about. You know, unless I'm talking to an idiot person who don't listen, who talk all the time, which is one of the problems about people. Not good listeners. They don't listen. Or absorb what you're trying to tell them, because they got their own way and their own single mind way to go. Just try my way first. If somebody come to you in a negative way, say, "Don't do that. That's not nice. That's not cool. Okay, you're a tough guy. You can win the fight. That's fine, man. Now, let's be friends. Let's go down and have a Coca-Cola or a beer somewhere. You ain't got to fight this guy. You ain't got to fight nobody unless they push you into a corner and do that. That's not what it's about, man. It's about mental strength. Being black is a beautiful thing, because I can walk down the street and get more attention doing nothing than anybody." "What are you doing in this neighborhood?" "Checking it out. I might want to rob it." You know? What else color can you be and get so much attention? It's a beautiful thing. Use it.
Yeah. and that just hit me. Flipping the script, taking the negative and using it as a positive step to move forward.
Yeah,
that's what I get from you. You done worked with so many people. I mean, Richard Pryor. Yeah. I mean, we talking legends. We talking Jim Kelly.
I work with black and white. I work black and white, man, because they understand. I respect them. They respect me. And if we respect each other, we have fun.
Yeah.
We make a movie and have fun doing a movie. You know, that's what it's about. Having fun while you work. And you can do that with any generation, any color, anybody, as long as they understand we're here from having fun. You don't compete with me. I'm not competing with you. If you do something clever and something smart that's not in the script, hey, I'm all for it, man. Let's do it. Cut, put it in, you know? I don't fight with you. If you smart enough to do something that's going to top me, I love it. Because two scenes later, I'm going to get you back. You know?
You know, and that brings us, because you done study, as we talking about that, I think of Aaron Banks.
Aaron Banks. Many years of Aaron Banks. We were doing demonstrations at Madison Square Garden back in the day. Yes. Remember, we was breaking boards, killing chickens, slapping pigs and hogs. That was back in the 70s, man.
We
ruled Madison Square Garden. Aaron Banks had two or three students. We used to go up on the stage, man, and do wonderful things up there. That's a great mental strength building. And it's not just physical. That's mental strength building. Yeah. I probably got the beginning of mental strength. And when I was in a senior in high school, I joined the Marine Corps.
Okay.
So I did 4 years in the Marine Corps. Man, that really was strong, because that's all about mental strength. Being a Marine, being the first in, never leaving anybody behind. Those kind of things are drilled into your soul, into your heart, into your mind. You're first in, you're going to get more firepower than anybody. Mm-hmm. Never leave anybody behind. Man, those are the things that really fortified how I felt about life. Not about me, because I had to make those changes and absorb that training into my brain. Then I got into martial arts. Then the second character came. You don't want to fight me. Okay. Don't do that.
All right.
Don't do that. You know.
Right. So in Three to Heart, well, that's interesting, because when I follow your career, I remember seeing you start doing more martial arts when you were doing stuff with Iron Banks.
Yeah.
But I know, like, in Three to Heart way, how did y'all decide to let, I mean, yeah, it was a perfect role play. Jim Brown had a certain characteristics of what his character did. Your character had a certain characteristic of what you did. And Jim Kelly just was like all martial arts.
Yeah.
I mean, knowing that you knew martial arts, how did y'all make that blend like that?
Well, I'm the one who really made the adjustment, because I understand for all of us to be in the same movie together, it's an ego destruction about to happen. But I have the ability to be light, on my words. And Jim is macho all the way. Right. Kelly is a martial arts all the way. So I knew I had to be like the butterfly. I went in between. That line when I broke through the window and rolled over and says, it's just me, the window washer.
Yeah.
That was part of my lightness. That was part of my way of fitting in.
Yeah.
Jim is standing there with the gun and says, come on, man, stop fooling around.
It was heroic. Go ahead.
But it wasn't bland. It wasn't bland, man. I break through the window, roll up. I don't know how I wound up on my panty looking right in Jim's face. And I said, it's just me, the window washer. And he says, come on, man, stop fooling around. Let's go. So he did his thing. I fit my way in. The same. We had a funny scene. I did a Western with Jim Brown called Take a Hard Ride.
Yeah, I remember that. Kelly,
We shot in Spain. We're crossing this really narrow bridge across a long ravine. And it's a rope bridge. And I got a horse. And I'm walking my horse, and Jim's behind me walking his horse. So I get over, we walk across this bridge, and as we get to the end, Jim comes up to me and says, God damn, man, keep that horse's ass out of my face. I said, Jim, don't walk so close to the horse. You know? You're walking behind me. I can't control the horse's ass, man. So we've had all these kind of moments, man. You know, it's fun working with friends and guys, you know.
So those weren't a part of the script. They were like natural, like, adaptations of what was happening at the moment, right? Is that what you said?
That was happening at the moment. That definitely wasn't in the script, dude.
it, It's funny because when you heard some of the entertainers, they say don't turn the camera off. You know, like a Kevin Hart, he's going, man, just keep the camera because you might get something that's better than the script when he goes outside the script. Yeah. How important is that? Like, because that's life. Just to go with the flow. Yeah. Just be you.
Good directors do that. Good directors don't really turn the thing off. You know, they wait for a moment before they cut off. Good directors do that, and directors who have go strictly by the script, you can tell, you know, if people are having fun or if they're just being actors. But there are some movies you can tell people are having fun, actors are ad-libbing and having fun. As long as you don't get too crazy with your ad-libs, it's okay. But good directors don't really cut that fast. They wait for a moment, because there are moments, even if there's no words, sometimes there's a look that happens at the end of the scene. And the director keeps that in. You don't say cut too quick, because then you don't get that moment. You don't get that look. So you wait for a moment, 3-4 beats, and if everything is quieted down, cut. Okay? That's a good director.
And the, you know, the humility that you show. I mean, because so many people, I mean, you're a legend. You're an icon, man. You, Fred, you consistent with being Fred. Ever since I've been knowing you consistent with being Fred, though nothing changed. But you're so humble. Some people get to that level of success and you can't even be around them. They just like, what keeps you grounded? What keeps you? I mean, just like this, I'm like, Fred, can I do an interview? He's like, man, what time? 8 o'clock? 8 o'clock California time.
So you know why? Because I'm gonna play golf. When I get down with you, I'm going to play golf, dude. Why don't you hold up my golf game? Come on.
So now, what keeps you humble?
I don't know if I'm humble or not. I'm a listener. I don't retaliate to people who think that I'm something different than what they expect. If that's how you feel about me, okay, that's fine. Now can we go have a Coke? You know, I think you're this, I think you're that. Because you can't please all the people. You can't please most of the people. You know, that's like me trying to explain why I do something and trying to explain me. That's a waste of time. You can't explain yourself to somebody because they've already drawn opinions and conclusions about you and you can't change their mind. So why bother? Why bother? We don't have any conversation. If whatever your political thing is, that's fine. Good. Love. Go for it, man. I like dogs. You like Democrats and Republicans? Good. I like dogs. Now we got that point clear. Let's move on.
Mr. Isaac, I mean, you're a fan. This is like greatness right here, man. I mean, how blessed. And I say this to a kid again, man. I don't care how low you are. I don't care what you're going through. Hold on. Because for me to be a part of this, to have two people that mean so much and help me in my life, you know, Isaac Florentine and Mr. Fred Williamson. Isaac, what would you like to say to Mr. Fred? We happen to have
hammer. Hammer, dog. You know, Mr. Fred, I'm in the hammer.
All right, the hammer.
Well, Fred, outside the States, football means, American football means nothing. You were Fred Williamson.
Yeah.
Maybe the hammer in the States. Yeah. As you can see here, I have a huge library. In this library, there are many issues of official karate magazines, and I do have some issues with you in Madison Square Garden demonstrating. Yes. I remember you were with a dress pants, without a shirt,
and
breaking boards. And
Hello, here we go.
Yeah. I remember that very well. And I remember, I'll tell you a secret. I went to see Duckman Bolt, and it starts with you in a cell, and you're doing a sidekick. Yeah. And somehow outside the building, outside the movie theater, I could put the stills pictures. That's as a kid, guys. I managed to put my hand in. There was a picture of you doing the sidekick.
Yeah.
And the same idea, you were wearing dress pants and shoes.
Right, right.
No wear shirt. And I took that picture of you. And so this is, I'm talking 1974, whenever it was.
Yeah. Yeah,
so I stole the picture.
I think we all did that when we were coming up. I used to, the movie theater, I would break in the screen and in a little glass and take all the posters, man. I used to have all of those.
No, that man Bolt was.
They used to hang them.
Yeah.
People, I used to come with not a razor blade, but with a jackknife. Thank you.
That Man Bolt was Universal's attempt to make a semi-Bond film with me because kept me in a suit, kept me in a tie. Yeah. And the movie did very well.
Very well.
And the Universal very came well. Back to me and they said, listen, they had a 3-picture deal with them. And they said, the movie did very well, but we don't want to be the first major studio to continue to make black films. And they said, we're just going to pay you off. And they paid me off. They gave me checks for the 2 remaining feature films.
Mm-hmm.
I said, okay. Now, Shaft came out. A couple more came out. They said, okay, we're ready to do it again. I said, no, I don't need you now. I got Po' Boy Productions. I got my own company. I don't need you now. Thank you very much for the offer. And that's how that happened, man. I mean, Batman Bolt was way ahead of its time.
Totally. And something about those movies that people don't understand. We were used to see American movies. You see John Wayne. And suddenly came Shaft.
Yeah.
Batman Bolt, 3 the Hard Way. Suddenly, those movies, they resonated because people from in the world,
yeah,
they see the other America that is unique, that is exotic, you know?
Yeah.
And I have a theory. I say because there were those movies with black stars, then the world was ready to accept a Chinese star like Bruce Lee. Yeah. It was like a transition, you know?
Yeah.
And I think it started, by the way, you did a Western in Spain, and it was probably an Italian Western.
Yes.
Because you see in Italian Westerns, you started to see heroes that are dirty.
Yeah, like, yeah.
Used to Run Man Run and the Big Gun Down. The hero is a Mexican that Thomas Milan played. He's illiterate. He doesn't know how to read and write, but he's the hero of the movie. And you're ready to accept these kind of heroes, you know?
But here's something that is interesting. My popularity in Europe is 2 times bigger than my popularity here.
Yeah, absolutely.
In America.
Those movies were very big overseas. I know that.
Even today.
Yes.
Because in America, I'm a black actor.
Yes.
In Europe, I'm an action star. My next movie is going to be in Spain, and we'll do another Western in Spain with Enzo Castellari.
Really?
Enzo did Inglourious Basterds with me.
Yes.
The next movie was in Spain. We got shut down by the virus, but we were preparing my next Western in Spain and with Castellari. It's an Italian Western. So as soon as this virus gets out of the way, bam, I'll be back in Spain.
Okay. So you did a remake of Jackson Bolt with, it wasn't Jackson Bolt, but it was Bolt with Robert Parham.
Well, that was a one day, you know, I like to help guys who are struggling, guys who don't have the notoriety, but they have the talent. And I said, okay, I'll help you. I'll do a scene in your movie, a couple of scenes in your movie so that it'll get noticed and you might get a little extra distribution if I'm in your film. So I did that for Robert Parham. I mean, as a friend to help out a buddy because it couldn't hurt me. It could only help him. And that's why I did that.
Right. Well, what was that like? Just that, because once again, we see a lot of guys who don't do that. I mean, once again,
that's that problem. That's that goddamn problem. Ain't mine.
Yeah. but Fred,
I'm not afraid of the competition, dude. You can't outdo me because you're gonna make me better. If I think you're outdoing me, I'm just gonna get better and more creative.
But can we tell other actors? I mean, you got guys out there that won't even slice a piece of bread for the next guys coming up.
You notice all my movies are full of my buddies.
Yeah.
3 the Hard Way, Black Caesar, Hell Up in Harlem.
Yeah.
All my movies that I produce and direct are full of my buddies.
Yeah.
I bring Jim Brown in, I bring Roundtree in, I bring Pam Grier in, yeah. I bring Gloria Hendry, I bring all the people who Hollywood has forgotten about.
Yeah.
Doesn't mean that they're not viable, doesn't mean that they're not marketable. Hollywood has just forgotten about them.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I bring them back, right? I don't care if they appreciate it. I don't really care if they show me any kind of gratitude. That's not why I do it. I do it because it's fun for me. And I know they appreciate it. Even if they don't say so, And even if they don't act like it, it don't bother me. Let's have some fun. I'll give you a chance to make some money and we go do our thing.
Well, I mean, I say in closing once again, and a lot of times when I say this to people, I'll be around people who I used to have their pictures on my wall, and I say, nah, you influenced me here. Because once again, as a little kid growing up in the projects, you don't have much. Nobody believes in you. But you go to a movie and you see a Three to Hardway. You see a Hell Up in Harlem. You see a Chinese Connection.
Bucktown.
Bucktown. Yeah.
Hey. That was the longest fight I ever had in a movie, man.
Look, me and Johnny Burroughs.
Took us 3 days for this fight with me and Thelma Rasulala.
Uh-huh.
We started inside in the courthouse, bounced down the stairs, broke the door outside, jumped over a few cars, took us almost 3 days to shoot that fight, man.
But me and Johnny Burroughs was one that people forgot about, but that's a sleeper right there, man.
Yeah, me and Johnny Burroughs, definitely. It was my salute to the veterans who came home and weren't appreciated for being in a war that they didn't want to be in the first place and was never declared a war that they were in, and they came home and got negative response from the public. This was my motivation to do that film.
Well, that was a good one. And I just say thank both of you. I mean, and that's from my heart. You know, I just once again hope that everybody that listens to this show can see that dreams do come true. And if you hold on to who you are and hold on to your integrity and keep God first, you don't have to sell out and be something that you're not in order to develop friendships. And I appreciate both of you. I'm still trying to be the good bad guy, Fred. That's who I'm trying to be, the good bad guy.
That's the key, man. So look, let me ask you a question. What happened to Menachem and Johan? Are they still doing over there? What are they doing?
So Menachem passed away a few years ago. And actually, like the giant that he was, very first opportunity to do a feature, he gave me.
Yeah.
He gave me the very first opportunity. He says, will it be a 90-minute movie? I said, yes. Okay, that was my very first feature.
He's that kind of guy. I was sitting at a restaurant in Los Angeles, and he came up to me, and he says, I want you to make a movie for me. Be coming to my office next week. Just like that. I went to his office the next week. He funded a film that I did. I mean, and what about Yoram?
I don't know him so well. He lives in Israel. I really don't know him, but Menachem I knew pretty well.
Right.
Yeah, he was really a legend, you know.
Well, Cannon was way ahead of his time. He was. I did a film for him at 3 o'clock in the morning. I get a call from Menachem. He says, "Fred, change the name of the movie." I say, "Why?" Yeah, I sold it twice. So change the name. So in the wife going to the newspaper, trying to find a name that worked. Called him back in Israel, says, okay, change the name of the movie to this. He had sold it twice to two different people.
Well, thank you, guys. Enjoy your golf, Mr. Fred.
Thank you, Fred. Thank you, Willie. It was an honor to talk to you, you know.
Gracias. Thank you, sir.
Have a great golf game, Mr. Fred.
No doubt.
The hammer.
Hey. Oosh.